And welcome to Passions for Life. For your hosts, Natalie Z, Travis Schultz, and the other one,
Wow, I've become an unperson.
The changeling.
In Natalie Z's Orwellian universe, I'm no longer, I don't have a name, and I don't exist.
The other one helps us pull back the curtain on your favorite show you always denied watching, Passions. Mm. I didn't think of anything, and it's the first thing that came out of my mouth.
That's okay. So I can be the other one.
That's on me.
That reminds me of Halston.
Halston?
How's it going?
Hey, guy.
We have not watched Halston, and I know that you guys talked about it, you and Valentine. Natalie, yeah. Do you have comfort an opinion
food.
On Halston?
Comfort.
Yeah, it's comfort. It's our comfort food. I would come home from work and pour a glass of something. And
I'm going to do this whole episode just like... Just like Ewan McGregor doing Halston.
That's pretty good, Ben.
He's so good.
Yeah, it was like comfort food. It was something that I would crawl in bed and we'd turn it on. And there's nothing to it. It's a live action cartoon, if that's a thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yes. what an interesting person, interesting life.
Yeah.
We have a coffee table book on him at the house.
I know.
And that now book it makes you want to look through it.
Is insane, though. He, fucking cocaine.
Fucking cocaine. Ben.
Don't do coke, Ben.
Tell us everything. Tell us what's going on. We miss you as usual. I'm sure people are sick of hearing us talk about how much we miss each other, but you know,
that's on them. They don't get it.
That is on them. Yeah. What's going on?
You know, my hiatus is going to be shorter than I thought, which is good in some ways.
Oh,
I think we start up again mid-June. I thought it was going to be July. So I'm trying to make the most of it. But I have noticed as the post-vaccination world opening up, et cetera, et cetera. And I talked about this with Travis briefly, talked about it with my therapist quite a bit. I feel like one of the casualties of what will hopefully be a post-COVID world is the ability to kind of do small talk with not mm-hmm. necessarily with close ones, not with close friends. Although sometimes I did apologize to Travis the other day. I was like, I've run out of stuff to talk about. I'm sorry. But like with like that sort of middle tier of people, like I experienced that again, you know, just the other day. I was playing tennis and I was like, yeah, so, you know, reading, do a little writing. That's pretty much it. How about you? And everyone's got kind of the same answer. Like everything's happening and yet nothing has happened. It's weird. I don't know. Have you guys experienced this in a pre-non-lockdown world?
Yes.
Yes.
The answer is yes.
What I've noticed is, I mean, we're in a slightly different situation because the people that we're meeting right now, we don't know us. So there is a bit more to talk about, but I have found that the same questions are being asked of me over and over again, sometimes by the same people over and over again. And that is, how is Reagan adjusting to school? How are you finding Melbourne? And my answer is boring. She's adjusting great. And Melbourne, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
So and then where do you go from there? It's just kind of, well, tell me about your upbringing.
Well, yeah. No, they don't. Yeah. No, what brings you here? Yeah. Well, Natalie and I, Reagan, a classmate of Ray's had a birthday party. So we went and it was constant talking. And everyone just asking questions and stuff. And it was exhausting because I hadn't done that. I hadn't gone to a party and had literally every person I made eye contact with say, oh, so, and then conversation begins. And like Natalie said, a lot of it was the repetition. Mm-hmm. But I found myself kind of in that. I felt similar to what you were feeling, I imagine, Ben, is just, I don't really have much to say other than that's why I'm here. That's where, and that's what I'm doing now. And I like your city.
What we've seen of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of guys are like, have you been to a footy game? And I said, no, I haven't been to a footy game because I don't have a sitter. And they're like, oh, would you like to go? And I said, yeah, that'd be awesome. That's one of the things I want to do. That's one of the things I've heard is amazing to do. Like, oh, invite you to the game. It's a be blessed. Lockdown. So
yeah, we keep sort of running into roadblocks. We're very lucky.
Yeah. No, but it's just funny. Like every guy has this thing. They're like, you gotta get a footy game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, let's go.
Well, I will say, I guess I and maybe we have learned nothing from improv because I'm no longer able to yes and to keep the conversation going. I'm just like,
well, maybe you have to be more conscientious about it. Maybe it's no longer just a passive exercise. It has to be just.
I think you're right.
Very deliberate yes anding all the time.
Or just sign up for a Zoom improv class.
Okay. No, that sounds like the funnest thing I could think of.
Fuck you, Travis. Get out of here. You're fired.
I'm out.
Yeah, I hear you, Ben. I see you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I feel you.
Thank you.
It's funny. I have been noticing that there is a lot of, and again, the situation is somewhat different for us, but when you move to a new town, you do get a stock set of questions asked constantly. And, you know, like when I do interviews for work, I tend to want to, because when you do what we do for a living and you're doing interviews, people ask the exact same questions over and over again. And I tend to want to mix it up. And the fact is nobody cares. Just answer it.
Yeah.
Just give them the facts. Just the facts, ma'am. I have finally found a little bit of downtime when I'm at work. My schedule's lightened up a little bit for now. I'm probably going to have to go back pretty deep into it soon. But I had a minute yesterday, so I decided to watch Miss Americana, the Taylor Swift documentary.
Right.
Which I liked very much. And it's a tough one to watch, I think, if you have a daughter, especially a daughter who is sensitive and who is a people pleaser. And who, you know, spends a lot of time just wanting, you know, to do the right thing. Because Miss Swift is very, very much encapsulates those ideals. But as an artist watching it, I realized something about myself. And that is that this is a person who thrives on people's approval and pleasing others and making sure that others think that she is good. And I think that a lot of that is part of why she is so successful. And what I realized about myself is that I think I would be more successful if I gave a fuck what people think about me. And it was a real revelation because most artists do. Like, that's why we get into this business, is because we want people approval. We want people to say good things about us. And I somewhere along the way just stopped caring. And I think that that says a lot about where I am. I'm happy about where I am, but there may be other places I could have gone if I gave a fuck.
You please the right people. You don't please everyone.
Twist. Oh, okay.
You choose who you please, which is a luxury, in my opinion. You assess the effort.
I like it a lot.
You assess the effort much quicker than most people, because, you know, let's talk about Taylor Swift. I'm sure she wants to please everyone, but she can't, because it's impossible. So it takes her longer to figure out that she should give up on certain people. So you, on the other hand, have, you know, just a quicker learning curve, I think.
I'm also older, just by a few years.
True. Yeah. And you also have an independence about you that I don't think a lot of people have. Like, you've always kind of just marched to your own tune.
Right, which marching to one's own tune at times can bar one from certain opportunities, which, again, I'm fine with. There
right,
have been things that I've said no thank you to that could have been.
Right. And I think people pleasers tend to get drawn into those things
right.
easier, because they're like, oh, you want me to do that? Okay, right, this will make you happy. And you're the person I want to make happy.
Right.
You, on the other hand, like, that won't make me happy. This will make me happy.
Well, and
I'll please these
and
people,
in her defense, as a musician, I think that you come up against that in a very, very different way than being an actor, because there is only so much we can control. So I can only I can only please you as much as that your writing is good.
Right.
And so if it's bad writing, I can work my ass off to make it work, which is sort of one of my specialties, but there's only so much I can do here. Whereas if you're a musician, and especially if you're a songwriter, it's yeah. all you. So yeah. I actually understand the idea of, you know, this is fully me. So of course I want everyone to appreciate it, enjoy it, and like it and love me, because mm-hmm. this is who I am. This is my soul. Whereas I am giving you the tool. I have these tools that people have given me, and I will, you know, I'll build the thing and then I'll present it to you. But only part of it is me. So if you like it, great. If you don't, fuck you. But it was, I enjoy watching things that make me understand things about myself. And conversely, I like watching Halston because it makes me feel warm and fuzzy and helps yeah. put me to sleep. That's why entertainment is so important.
Well, the thing I was thinking of when you were talking about this, I was reminded of this is not an original thought, but someone was talking about the difference between Bruce Springsteen and Lou Reed, both of whom are great, but their relationship to the audience, to people pleasing, is very different. You know, Bruce Springsteen goes out and plays, and the louder the crowd gets, the more attention he gets, the better he performs, the more he likes doing it, the more he's happy to be there. Lou Reed's kind of pissed off that you're there watching him. You know, he's like, because he's like, I make the fucking music, and, you know, you can yeah. take it or leave it, but it doesn't matter that you're here. In fact, it bothers me that you're here. Yeah.
I showed up to work and now all you people are fucking encroaching on my process. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I identify with one of those men.
Yeah. Well, for the record, I like Lou Reed much better than Bruce Springsteen. I think they're both great, but for Lou Reed's music to me resonates much more than Bruce Springsteen.
Welcome to Passions for Life.
Where welcome,
Natalie.
We always talk about everything but passion.
About passions.
Let's jump in, guys.
Wow.
Okay, this is episode 572.
This episode to learn stuff about you.
I know. Well, that's why we do this. The only reason we created Passions for Life is so that you and I can learn more about each other.
Improve our marriage.
Right. Right.
It's couples therapy, and sometimes I'm here.
Guys, this is the famous episode 572. You all know it. You all love it.
Why is it famous? Tell us why it's famous.
It's not. It's incredibly banal.
No, it's the second double wedding.
Look.
I didn't even put that together.
Yes, as far as I know, the only way to get married, if you're in harmony, is to have a double wedding. Like if aliens were to study the human race, human beings through watching passions, they would conclude that most weddings are double weddings.
Okay, I agree. I think you're right, but this double wedding doesn't happens in St. Lisa.
St. Lisa.
Or is it Bermuda? Or is Bermuda St. Lisa?
Bermuda is St. Lisa. They're the same thing. Yeah, we are in ridiculous. We are
we're in the Bermuda
St. Lisa, and we are also in Harmony. There's only two real storylines going on. There's no kids. It's just the adults.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which makes it
Snorefest.
A super special, spectacular lease.
Well, I think we can find some gems here. I'm very confident that we can.
I think Ben's a fan.
I do, but I think like for example our last episode that we watched the 14 was such an example of passions
at its best.
Yeah. And this is an example of what passions was not good at, which was having the non-spiritual witchery stuff happening and just characters sitting around talking about the thing that they're actually not doing but trying to do.
Right.
There's a more articulate way to say that, but you know, there's so much happening in each scene with innuendos and back talking and side talking, and it's just done so bad.
It's very bad. The direction and the staging.
Yeah.
It's
the staging, the way it's shot.
Yeah.
And again, there was no rehearsal time put into any of this. Rehearsal is the only way to make this work well.
Yeah, I actually kind of want to, I don't want to slag on the director. I'm sure that they were pressed for time, but it does show that this is very rushed. It feels very rushed.
And when you write scenes like that, that's the other thing too. They didn't factor this in their writing. They just kept on writing it this way, scenes like this.
Well, this is interesting to me because from what I've gathered, you guys don't like the supernatural stuff, the Tabitha Timmy stuff. But I wonder if maybe that's, because the episodes that we find more to talk about and we get a little bit more like into it, they seem to have more supernatural stuff. So I wonder if that's,
that's just us being actors. We were never part of the Tabby Timmy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also we're kind of watching it from a different perspective now.
Yeah. Because they do that element does add. And I wonder why that is, because other soaps don't have the supernatural element and they do just fine with the human drama and like the sort of quasi-Shakespearean stuff. But for some reason...
It's better writing.
Yeah.
It's the writing.
The writing's better.
It's the writing. And the storylines are more rooted in a reality that exists. I mean, nobody talks to each other the way these characters do. People don't talk to each other.
That's a really good point. I think that soaps have very much pivoted into more of a hyper-realism because that's just sort of like where we're at. I mean, that's what we accept now, I guess, in story. Like that kind of storytelling, like romance. I don't know that people want magic mixed with their romance, do they? I don't know.
I mean, it depends. Outlander is hugely successful, and that's magical stuff, time travel and whatnot.
Yeah
sure, but time travel is different than like a witch and a doll casting spells.
Well, that's a little silly. But I mean, True Blood was pretty silly, and there was a lot of, I mean, that was basically, that was romantic and sensual, et cetera.
Look, mm-hmm. I think the answer to your question, Ben, is the answer is yes. Yeah. People do want that. They do want drama and they do want spirituality stuff because it's very popular. And this show was created because of that. That's how passions existed. But, there's people that do it well and there's people that don't.
You do seem to have more notes than me.
What do you guys want to do? Where do you want to start?
Hospital.
Okay. Yeah. Let's dive into the hospital. What do you got?
Well, the opening scene is an example of eye lines not matching up, because I wasn't sure if Sam was talking to David and if David was looking at Sam when he was talking. I could not tell what was happening.
I will second that. I thought they were in two different rooms, right, and they're having like this weird artistic matching voiceover conversation, like a scene from Grease, where like where he's like saying, "Oh, Sandy, I miss you." And then they cut to Sandy on the beach and she's like, "If only I could be with you." I know that's not what happens in Greece, but it's like that idea. Like they're trying to do something with these. Anyway, it was confusing as fuck.
It was. And it just started out with that. Like, it started that way. And I went, "Oh, here we go."
Right. But we do learn that Ivy is in the hospital because she was saving the kids. Very Ivy behavior.
Yes.
So consistent. Yeah.
Ivy was
character.
Really doing that. I think she's trying to save her own ass.
Oh, and I also noticed that Eva, so remember last episode, Juliet had the Shakespearean monologue without the Shakespeare. Eva also gets a Shakespearean monologue and she kills it. She really, like, it's pretty great. Did you guys notice that her speech?
Grace's
premonitions don't always come true.
Well, she was a little more hedged than that. She was like, most of her premonitions have come true, but not all of them.
Not all of them, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what the speech was about. I didn't write it down, but I do remember thinking that it was, you know, one of the rare moments where Eva's allowed to kind of sink her teeth into something.
No, that was good. That was good.
Oh, she talks about castrating Julian.
Yes.
And fucking Grace. I'm going to go off on Grace. I know I say this every time. Fucking Grace is like, "Pilar, you're not allowed to talk that way." Like, what? Who the fuck are you?
Well, I know that, but that's this whole thing. Their relationships are just wow.
It's so subservient. Mm. Like, no, you're the help, and you're not allowed. You're a woman of God. Don't talk about castration.
Grace, that's again. Grace would never say that. She'd be like, she. That's why Grace was the most hated character on this show. Everyone despised her. And Gwen was second, but.
Travis, to your point earlier, it wasn't till halfway through this episode that I realized that David was just like around the corner, kind of behind a column, eavesdropping.
Same thing.
Gross. I was like, where are these guys? Is he in a hospital? Anyway.
Do you think that would be an example of crossing the line?
No, it's because they started with close-ups and they didn't start with any kind of like wide shot. They started with close-ups, so you have no idea where these characters are in relation to each other. I mean, I'll have to double check, but I don't think it's an example of crossing the line, which isn't as big a deal anymore as it used to be. But
no, because I think they were looking. What was confusing is they were looking at each other.
Yes,
but that was again, like you said, it's because of the there was no establishing shot to see the whole room.
Right,
and you know maybe that's because the editors knew that this scene had already happened in the last episode. You know, or they cut it out for time, or because you know that shot exists.
Yeah, it could have been the previous episode. Probably was what it was. In the previous episode, they all walked in. David walked in. You saw him enter. So you had a sense. But you have, I don't know.
It's always nice to remind people what the hell is going on.
Yeah, because not everybody saw it yesterday.
But you know, the argument against that is, well, you figured it out, didn't you?
Halfway through.
Yeah, but I spent a lot of time being confused. I didn't feel good.
It does not feel good. It does. It's very confusing.
This show is not to make you feel good.
Oh boy, I wish it were. I'm going to start doing this because I think this is what Natalie says. So this is I've adopted it. Can we talk about TC's costume? His the way they dressed him.
Sure. Is that, I didn't even.
What do you call that? A windbreaker?
I call it a mistake, and if I were... Look, I just know this. If I am dressing myself, which I do, if I put on a...
Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
You do?
Amy doesn't do that?
Nope. And so I take all the blame and all the credit. But even I know that if I put on a ketchup red shirt and then put on a mustard yellow windbreaker, I'm going to be called a condiment bar. It's going to look bad. It's going to look really silly. And so the whole time I'm watching him, I'm thinking hot dogs. The whole time I'm like, I made me hungry for hot dogs and ketchup and fries.
Well, that's interesting because I didn't think that. In fact, what I thought the whole time I was watching TC was he is the only human being on this show.
Yes.
Like he is the only person who is actually saying things that maybe a human being would, and then that's pushing it. Like it's borderline, but it must be lonely for him to be on this, like in this world of like aliens, and he's the only one who's actually using any kind of like human logic or rationale or syntax, you know, speaking the way humans right. speak.
And yes. you know who else feels that way is Whitney.
Oh, yeah. 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 In Bermuda. Yeah. Well, they're related. So
yeah. TC, AKA tennis coach. He, I don't know how deliberate this is, but there is a moment where Sam is clearly in denial world. He's like, look, I love my wife. I did have to tell Ivy that I loved her too. And
right. I felt things and yeah. I felt like I maybe something. Did love her.
I got a little yeah. chub. I got a little,
I got a half chub. I was really thinking about Grace, because yeah. she is so sexy.
It's like the Jimmy Carter. I had lust in my heart. Tim Carter.
Jimmy Carter was a president, Natalie.
Former
he's
Timmy
my favorite
Carter.
President. Why yeah. are we talking about yeah, Jimmy like, Carter having like, lust in his heart?
Because
that was his famous statement.
Yeah, when he was busted.
Infamous.
He was
Jimmy
busted.
Carter?
Yeah.
I think you guys are thinking of somebody else.
No. No and instead of yes and no but
sorry, go ahead. What about TC?
He's yeah. well, just like the way he delivered the line was so good, because it would be like if Travis was telling me something that was clearly crazy, but I was trying to be supportive, but like thinking right. on my feet, I'd be like, yeah, man, that sounds reasonable.
I loved it when he said it was the most authentic acting I've seen on the show, and he goes, oh, Sam.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And again, it's about the credibility of characters. All of a sudden, Sam's just giving up on his whole life because he said, I love you to
a lady he once fucked. Later, like, he once had sex ago, with. Yeah. Like,
well, not, and you know, the mother of his child.
And then, now the mother new. Of his child. I mean, like, bro, give yourself a break here. I'm constantly fascinated by the line, the evidence is overwhelming.
Yes.
I don't know why. I just.
Yeah. Well, they're overwhelmed by the evidence. Mm.
And then TC, tennis coach's reaction. Hmm.
Yeah.
That's compelling. That is compelling. That is like, compelling. That's just, he's like, hmm. And it's compelling. You got a chub while saying you love.
I think we're making up the chub part, right?
Yes, like, he didn't say. They didn't use the word chub in the episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
A soft on.
So,
did it bother anyone that the whole conversation about Grace completely omits
completely
what she wants?
Well, for me it was like convenient that I said way to make it about you, Grace, because she comes in everybody. But also the fact that nobody sees faces in their premonitions.
I'm talking about the TC conversation,
TC Sam conversation. Yeah, it's like they're talking about a car.
Yeah.
They're like, man, right. I went to the dealership and I looked at a new car, and man, but I love my old car.
Yeah, it's assuming
a new car.
It's presupposing that no matter what they want, whether Sam chooses to go with Grace or Ivy, it doesn't matter what Grace wants. They're like,
no, never been about that. Yeah. Yeah.
Even David's like, I'm going to get that car.
David, everybody wants the car.
Before you
everybody wants the car.
It's a piece of property.
I have a theory about David. I think he's an incubus. I think, and maybe I'm just trying to bring some supernatural into it, but he has some sort of hold on this woman who by now, if she were reasonable, would have been like, dude, I'm married. And we may have been married once, but I don't remember. I've got a whole life.
I think that.
Get out of my house.
Grace does finally get a backbone by the end of this.
Yeah, she does.
She's like, listen, bitch. Yeah. Leave me the fuck alone. And then I'm like, and so when I see her do that, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm okay with you now. I'm okay with you. But why is it got to be that way in the beginning? Just have some consistency.
I don't know. He must have given her some really good deep dicking at some point, because
she doesn't remember it.
But somehow her body remembers it, because she has not given him any kind of Heisman player go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's back, because he liked what she gave him.
She gave him some deep dick.
Some pegging.
That's probably it.
At this point, my family is going to be turning off. Little trivia about David Hastings. He's played by Justin Carroll, who was born in Greece, which is why there's
Wait a minute. That's not Australian?
It's not Australian. I think he's like Greek, but probably was raised with a British education. Yeah. So that's why there's an accent that none of us could place, I think.
For sure.
Yeah. I remember quite liking Justin Carroll. Do you remember having any?
Yeah, I liked him. I liked him. I liked him a lot.
I feel like he was worldly and he still was. Very well, maybe. But yeah, I think I also recall him hating this. as much as we all did.
I mean, unless...
Sorry to call you out, Justin.
They should have made him an incubus. That would have been really interesting and in keeping with the show.
Hey, we don't know. We don't know.
That's true. There's episodes after this that we haven't seen. I think what you were talking about earlier, let's get back to Grace making it about herself, because she does do that. You're totally right, Natalie.
Yeah, they're talking about the kids, and I hope everything's okay, and Teresa, and then she's like, speaking of which, listen to the shit that's going on with me. And everybody's like, nobody fucking asked you.
And I love Grace's reaction to that, too. Grace's tragic life.
Yeah.
Dr. Eve's like, what was it? I can't remember now because I didn't write it down, but it was so good. She's just like, oh, Grace. Almost annoyed with it. Like, oh, Grace.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're talking about your shitty life again.
Well, Pilar was like spilling like this like fear and anxiety about her kids.
Oh, my.
And then Grace is like, let me tell you about what's going on in my life. I know. Fuck your kids. I've got two men who want me. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Two men.
So I'm
fuck
suffering.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the pantheon of passion's dialogue that is like clearly written for after the fact to kind of explain things that came before without having to try to actually come up with the history. Check out how vague this is. I was always afraid something would come out of my past and haunt me. Well, that can apply to anything or nothing.
Yeah,
that can apply to Reagan.
Yeah,
something's going to surface.
Yeah, I've
been around for 5 years.
I don't know.
Something's you had happen, at lunch. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I always knew hospital food, right? And you think that if something that is as important enough to haunt you, you know what that is. I knew that my relationship with David would come back and haunt me, but something. Yeah. Just something? I'm not sure.
Something.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the past, I would have said, these writers have no time to write this. So they're just like, D-d-d-d-d. And then I go on TikTok or I go on Instagram stories and I look at like the things that people are doing in an instant. And I'm like, no, you have no excuse. You have no fucking excuse. You can be creative in a moment if you're an artist. If you are hired to do this, it is your job to not be so fucking bad at it.
Yeah. I mean,
the rant. What's going on, Ray? What are you doing?
Oh, hey,
Listening to you guys.
Okay. Well, look, that's the thing that happens, and I sometimes have to like point this out when I'm on a show. Like tying something to a specific time period or a specific past or future event, you want to sometimes hedge it because you don't want the fans to be like, "Wait a minute, you said on January 14th." So you try to make it vague, but this is too vague. This is too vague. It's kind of silly.
Yeah, I'm with you. We're in agreement.
Great, as always.
Okay, fuck Grace, and let's move on to Bermuda.
Okay. Bermuda. Let's do it.
Because Bermuda is really where it's at.
I know.
So fun.
As I stated in our last episode, this episode came about because I was in it.
Yeah.
For a hot second, I was in it, and I had gams for days.
To make this show work, that's a very key thing.
Put Natalie Z.
Make sure that Natalie's in it.
Yeah.
I actually wrote, nice plotting face, Natalie.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I took some liberties with my lines, too, in this one. Because, again, I was pulling a TC and sounding like how humans talk.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, I was not sticking to the script.
Question for you guys. When did Ivy and Julian divorce? Because I feel like because we've been jumping around, I must have missed that.
I think it was a quickie.
Oh, yeah. When did that happen?
It must have happened right after the tabloid thing came out.
Which speaks to
with the Sam thing. It was the Sam thing.
Right.
Sam, I want to say it was related to Sam.
No, it was the tabloid thing. He said, fuck you, I'm divorcing you. You had a kid with somebody else.
Yes, that's what it was. Yeah. Sorry.
In Harmony, apparently, in as much as everyone gets married in double weddings, it's very, you can get a very quick divorce and annulment. Like,
Very quick. Yeah.
Because Teresa references
marriage,
that.
Not so much. Yeah, but certainly. Yeah.
It's a key tourist attraction.
So like, to St. Lisa.
You go to Vegas to get married, and then you go to Harmony or St. Lisa to get a one-day annulment or divorce.
That's actually a really good selling point for a destination.
Yeah, it should be.
I'm gonna look into that. I'm gonna write.
You can get a divorce in a day.
Write that down. I have to say, I think Lindsay is very good with Ben in this episode. It's the first, maybe not the first time, but one of the few times that we see her not doing the like little girl thing. She seems like an adult.
Yes.
With him, which, you know, I would assume that the writers saw that and said, oh, let's put them together more. But that's giving the writers a lot of credit, or the producers, I guess, a lot of credit.
Well, yeah. I think that happened probably. They were like, yeah, we're going to marry him and then have her in the Crane Mansion all the time. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
I have Julian on fire. Just I love when he's describing to Teresa what will happen to him. He's like, and then Luis will find out, and then I'll die a hideous death.
Yes.
And it reminded me of how Ben was always drumming up the fear of Luis. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, oh, he's terrified.
He's a hothead.
He's always like doing this around Luis. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's cowering. So good. He latched onto those little tidbits. Sorry, Ben.
No, it's fine. I did wonder, watching the Justice of the Peace the whole time, like, they couldn't get the guy from Police Academy? Because it's basically the same guy, right? It's a character.
They couldn't afford him.
Right, yeah. They couldn't afford him.
Yeah.
Yes, go.
No, you go. I have something new.
So no, the other guy, the guy with the mustache. I loved him.
Yes.
He seemed like an actual actor.
Yes. He's like the poor man's Chris Christopherson.
Yeah.
He was good. Great. He was good.
Yeah.
He was funny. I like his finger acting.
Yes. He was like,
I don't like the sound of this.
Yes. I must mess with Julian.
Yes. I have a booger on my finger and I can't get it off.
As I was watching this, my mind kind of wandered, surprisingly. And, I was like, Hotchkiss, that's a weird name. Like, so I looked it up, and it's not a very common name. The most famous Hotchkiss is a man named Benjamin B. Hotchkiss, who invented...
Oh, look at you!
Yeah, he invented a machine gun that was used to kill lots of people in one of the world wars. So,
you must be so proud.
Why am I proud? You're the Hotchkiss. I'm just...
I just portrayed...
I'm not related to him. My name's Hayes.
Well, neither am I.
I think that's where Gwen got all her money.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wondered if that was some connection. There's also a private school in New England, like a prep school, that's the Hotchkiss School. So I just like wondering where the writers came up with that. Because when I come up with names for things, there's usually an inspiration behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that would probably work pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they were looking at like...
a bad past?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Murderous bad?
Yeah.
I wonder.
Negativo.
I added to many lives to death.
Yeah, I just wrote in all caps, why am I there?
Why are you there?
Why am I there?
You got stuck there, that's why.
One of the great things about this wedding thing, and this is, again, me trying to find the amazing beginnings of what probably became not amazing. They're using a lot of dramatic irony, which we all learned about in high school. Like, we know all the secrets, but they don't. So that's the fun. But this whole like constant interruption of the wedding, it becomes almost farcical in nature.
Yeah.
And I was reminded, film nerd comment coming, the movie Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie, where they keep trying to have dinner and they keep getting interrupted by more ridiculous and absurd things that are happening. And I'm sure that was not the inspiration for this, but the effect is the same. And it actually kind of plays...
What is the name of it?
Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie. I think it's on the Criterion Channel.
It's a French movie.
Spanish.
Spanish movie.
I feel like I've seen it, but it sounds wonderful if I haven't. There was no inspiration for this. It was just we have... 5 days a week to fill,
right?
In this time slot, so let's do that, I guess.
It kind of worked, though. I did start to enjoy and anticipate what's going to be the next interruption of this wedding. I just wish they would have continued to escalate it. Then it could have been really fun,
right? I keep just getting more and more ridiculous.
I just really liked Travis continuing to talk about how his mom is almost dead and Sheridan's dead and I can't wait any longer. Life's too short. Let's get going with this.
Yeah, it's such a weird transition for a weird motivation for Ethan to get married.
Yeah, for anyone to get married.
One of the things I was like, oh, I am not good at acting worried. It was like, Ivy Crane's in the hospital. I walk up and I go, oh no. I was clearly put out the door on that one. And then another thing I noticed is when in my line I say, you know, Teresa says, maybe we shouldn't get married. Maybe Julian and Rebecca just want to do it on their own. Maybe we should just not do it, you know? And Ethan has a line. It's like, you're such a caring person. And what I love about you. And in the background, you hear like somebody clearly bumped their foot or there was a hammer and they're like, nope, that was good. Let's keep it.
Yeah. Moving
like,
on.
And it's right on when I'm like, saying the line caring and loving person, you know what I mean? It's just like, wow. I mean, you get it's so bad. I think you can see the actors in the background doing this, like looking around, like, what was that?
Like, oh no,
was that you? It wasn't me. Yeah, it's so just like run and gun. Let's go.
Yeah, that's what it always was.
It was always like that.
I'm gonna agree with you, Travis. That,
also, when I said Winthrop, I said it. I can't even say my last name. And that was always something on that show. I could never say my last name correctly.
Well, you have a thing with names.
But that's fair because that's new. It's new to you. It's your new name.
It's my speech impediment kicking back in.
I agree with you, Travis, that your ability to convey concern or shock is really evident when the bellhop comes in with yet another one of these ridiculous interruptions with the news, which is, and I quote, Ivy Crane, has been struck by lightning and she's had a very bad fall.
But it was staticky, so I wasn't able to get a lot of information. And then he proceeds to just vomit shitloads of information.
Yes, but yeah. Travis might as well have been told, hey, your cat was locked out and it got caught in the rain. It's okay now. As opposed to your mother's been struck by fucking lightning and she had a bad fall.
Right. And then I'm like, well, sister, waiting for the plane. Let's get married.
Yeah. I mean, we're here anyway.
I mean,
might as well make hay.
Don't you want to get married right now? Yeah.
And Julian owns several airlines because there's so many.
Ugh, that was also kind of like you could have been a little better there. Writers,
are it's we funny how they just it's like asking a six-year-old, hey, if you were rich, what would you do? I'd own planes.
Yeah.
And you're like, great.
He owns all the planes and all the trains.
All the planes. And he has islands.
Are we going to watch the episode where Teresa and Julian get married or no?
Sure. You want to?
I don't know. Is Gwen in it?
No, she's not. But no, but
none of us. We should watch it.
I mean, listen, if there's an episode we're interested in, I think at this point we can break the rules. We made them.
Yes, that's true.
All right. So Brian in his outsider's outfit on the boat.
Creepy,
with,
creepy.
McKenzie. Creepy, or, sorry, Brian. Sheridan. Sheridan has been rescued from the waters.
This is a really weird scene.
Creepy fisherman. And she's,
I hate it.
She's
I
unconscious.
Hate it so much.
She's got beginnings of hypothermia.
Yep.
Yes.
did we do a drinking game on how many times he referred to her as pretty lady?
Pretty lady.
We could have easily.
Here's your boyfriend, pretty lady.
Oh my God.
You don't have a ring, but I bet you have one.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
A lady this pretty. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah. And the thing is that she's really cute, but dude, let's relax.
He's been on a boat for a while.
No, and I know that. And I know that that's why, like, put your dick back in your pants.
She's, even stumbly captain.
Well, that's a whole thing
that
could be unpacked about what kind of point of view the producers have about men. as soon as we have no ability to say no in our minds. And I'm sure that's probably true in some cases, but like it happens so fast, but with such little motivation. Like the motivation was that he said, this should make up for no tuna.
Oh my God, I love that line. This should make up for my loss of tuna.
It's so many fish metaphors, gross fish metaphors.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so listeners, what happens is they're on this boat and the stumbly captain comes down and decides he's going to rape Sheridan.
He's like,
because he's losing fish.
Because he had to rescue her.
Because he had to rescue her.
So to make up for it, he's going to have sex with her against her will.
That's called rape.
Yes.
I wrote, oh, yes, the classic motive for rape, opportunity cost.
Yep.
Opportunity
yep. Cost. Always. But yeah. He does bring a knife to a knife fight.
Yes.
So that's
that at least, you know, every stumbly captain has a knife.
Every stumbly captain.
I like the mock fight, the way it was shot. It was so weird. Yes. And then, like, Captain throws his knife down and then runs away. And then his last, like, step lunge with his chest out, like, yeah, you better go. Like that kind of thing. That's so like that, like bully in high school. Like, yeah you better get away from my locker. It was so bad. And so just that guy, I'm like, yeah, you definitely beat up people on the playground for their fucking peanut butter sandwiches, you dick.
He had a classic bully look with that sort of T-bird, no sleeves.
Yeah, very 1950s.
Yeah, very outsiders. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was his decision.
Oh.
You think?
Yeah. Because why would a fisherman in the middle of the Atlantic? Wait, no, are they in Bermuda?
Yeah, Atlantic.
Are they dressed like?
Dressed like they're in the South Pacific, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, musical. I'm pretty sure that was his choice. He's like, nah, I want to rip the sleeves off here.
Here's a question. How's the relationship between the captain and Brian going to be now that he's basically committed mutiny? I mean, someone's got to get that boat.
They'll shake and make up for it.
I think Brian's going to get fired.
I mean, clearly that's a problem because he's disobeyed the orders, and you don't do that on a boat.
Yeah. Well, just ask Gwen.
I was going to say, Gwen can tell us. She knows all about boats in the Navy.
That's a really good point. Now, is she her naval knowledge.
Experience. They needed it. Yeah.
If Gwen were the captain and I mutinied against Gwen, you know what she was going to do to me?
Blow you out of that water.
That's right. Boom. Blow me out of the water. That's right.
So yeah, this is the beginning of Brian.
I've decided that every time I'm at a restaurant and food is, if I ever go back, and a plate of food is set down in front of me, I'm going to say, this should make up for my loss of tuna.
Oh, I think that's a good catchphrase.
I mean, I can't tell if they're being cheeky because of the sexual language, tuna, you know, skin boat to tuna town, blah blah blah, or if they're oblivious.
Yeah. What came across to me is that the writers were very aware of what they were doing, and the actor was not.
Mm.
Right,
that's what I was. Happening.
Travis, how would you do that line if you wanted the proper subtext to get the sexual innuendo through that? Let's really gross people out here.
Let's hear it.
Pretty lady. This should make up for my loss of tuna.
Oh, that's so gross. We both had to cover our mouths.
Does that work? All right, Natalie, your turn.
I'm not topping that. I am not going to even fucking try.
Pretty lady.
I'm going to do my awesome. Get far enough away from
that. This should make up for my loss of two.
Okay, now it's Halston.
Victor.
Can we close with the brief, the tangent that was Luis on the beach alone again, naturally.
Carrying around an empty urn.
What is up with this urn? He's rubbing
what
it.
What is
like,
that urn?
Like a genie's going to come out? Oh, please. Wait,
it is empty, isn't it? Because they don't have.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, my God.
It's an empty urn that he's carrying around. He carries it to the double wedding. He carries it to the beach.
Wait, he
probably takes it on the.
There's nothing in it.
And I remember Galen being like, why? Why do I have this? Can I throw it in the water? And they're like, no, you can't throw it in the water. He's like, why would I carry this around? It's like, because it's her.
Oh, it was so, I couldn't take his moping and his like crying. It was too much.
Oh, with the glycerin.
Yeah. It did make me wonder if perhaps in a different version of the show, if Harmony couldn't have been some sort of construct that Luis is living in, a la The Matrix. Because it seems like the world of Harmony exists to basically dangle happiness in front of him and then yank it away. And that's true for most of the characters, but he in particular.
For Sheridan as well.
That's pretty cool. I like that. Like if the idea that Luis is like the Truman Show kind of thing.
Yeah.
I like that.
Although he does need to quit talking about boats because he everything's a boat metaphor for him.
It really is.
Yeah, he talks about boats a lot. Yeah.
Sheridan, you're coming back to me on a boat.
Yeah, and he was like, but that boat's never going to come. When am I going to learn? The boat never comes. Maybe he should be with Gwen. He should be with Gwen, and they can talk about boats and blame people.
Louise and Gwen. There's some fanfic, there guys. Well, guys, this was a very, very, very successful podcast. we really did it. We really deconstructed. We came here and did what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And Travis is going to take a nap.
No, I'm just, you know, exhausted.
It's exhausting.
But we haven't discussed themes yet, so don't rush off.
No, we haven't. I was simply...
I got a great list, guys, I think.
All right. Okay, I'll start with mine. In marriage, three's a crowd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Meaning three marriages is a crowd? I see. I like that there's a few ways they could go. Yeah, I like that.
Do they ever do a triple wedding in Harmony?
I'll wiki that. And get back to you.
There might have been a double wedding with a monkey wedding, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Orangutan.
Orangutan.
Orangutan. Do you want me to go?
Yeah, Travis, you go.
I've got three. I got marriage is not forever, but bad acting is. I got double weddings are double trouble.
That's good.
This is my favorite. This is my personal favorite. With stakes this low, who shouldn't get married?
Ooh, that's my philosophy.
My theme is it was like the double wedding thing. I did like a double mint gum thing, like double your refreshment, double your pleasure, double wedding Harmony Town, but kind of dumb. You win again, Travis. Congratulations.
Travis always wins.
The reason I had less notes is because about halfway through I went, I'm just going to focus on my theme for this episode.
You didn't want to cram for the test? You were like, I'm just going to nail the essay portion.
And, you know, I'd pop up when Brian came on because I'd just be like, oh, I love hating on that guy.
Pretty lady.
Yeah, pretty
lady.
That
was so disturbing to watch. Like in a different context. Don't.
Now how do I get these clothes off you without putting you in a compromising situation?
I mean, my initial reaction is like, you've never been to a massage. You've never had a massage. They can do that. They just tuck the sheet.
Well, did you notice that he was doing that?
Yes. So he knows. The actor knows.
I was like, wow, that was an interesting choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brian's one point. He went to school, but he never finished.
Look, that whole setup on the boat, by the way, that could be a whole standalone, like, scary fucking movie. Like, woman picked up. Totally.
Yes. Let's watch it then. Another fanfic.
Well, no, we can take it out of Passions. We can take it away from Passions and make it its own thing. But that's why, like, some of these, like, you watch some of the stuff, and if you took it into a different context, it'd actually be really effective. It's just because they have to service certain storylines and supernatural elements or whatever, or just the speed of making it, it doesn't always work.
Yeah, the roadblocks are there.
Housekeeping.
Hey, listeners. We finally got past 100, which was exciting. And 100 reviews. And we just want to keep going. We just want to keep going. We want to go for
100,000.
So please go to Apple Podcasts. Rate us and review us. 5 stars is preferred. I was just remembering how Valentine begged on several podcasts ago. He's like, I'm not ashamed. I will beg.
Yeah.
If you want to comment, if you want to ask us questions. I don't know, just vent. We have an email address. You can do so. It's emailpassions@gmail.com. And occasionally we'll even answer questions.
You can follow us on Instagram at Passions for Life Pod.
And then Twitter is @Passions4 for those of you who are still on that platform.
It's still more popular than ever.
Okay, says you.
Says Ben. Also, we have a supplemental video that is
in the show notes,
where you can watch the episode and watch it and then listen to the podcast, or watch the podcast and then listen to the podcast, watch the show.
Whatever's clever. We're doing
a. You'll never
clubhouse.
Find us.
We're doing some moan rooms in the clubhouse. Yeah. Excellent. You know, just look for them. There.
Yeah, our moan room is Ethan and Teresa forever.
EthanandTeresa.com. Is that a thing?
It will be now. We're buying it.
Yeah, it's like a new dating site.
Yeah.
Matches up people from the opposite side of the tracks.
As always, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other.
Yes,
and,
be safe.
We'll holler at you next time.
That's right. Thank you for listening. Bye.